Good evening. My mother-in-law and my husband's twin sister and her husband and their children are all here with us. And so we've got, 7 kids between our two sets. And so, you may have heard us shushing in the back. Not everyone from the extended tribe has mastered the art of the quiet hush yet. Thank you for your forbearance. And actually, that's one of the things I love about this church, is that when we started visiting, I was really self-conscious about what it would be like to be here with my 4 children, because I have a younger tribe, and as much as they enjoy church and have been in church all their lives, there are some social nuances that escape them. And so sometimes, you can be in a place and they do what children do. And as a mom, you can feel like ashamed of what you brought in with you. You know what I mean? Like, people look and you're like, oh, Lord, just maybe there could just be like a personal rapture. Like, just me. You could just take me right now, God. You know? I mean, maybe some people haven't felt like that, but that is just keeping that real. And so that's one of the things I love, is that my kids are exuberant in their worship. Sometimes even when no one else is being exuberant, and they like to, speak and engage. Sometimes when no one else is speaking or engaging, and you guys just, you handle it. You guys keep going for the Lord, and, my kid goes running down the aisle with like a flag, and you guys are just like, yes, Lord, and I'm just like, oh God, thank you. I don't know if you understand how valuable that is to a young mom. To not feel like you are detracting the entire rest of the room from their pursuit of the Lord, And so I really value that. But the hushing was making me think about last night. Ron and I were at a Christmas party, they did this thing where all the tables, they played a game, all the tables got a Christmas song, and you had to like make an arrangement from it and a presentation, and you had to like present it to the rest of the, so you had to sing this song, and our table gets Silent Night, and we decide to be silly. So Ron's like beatboxing, and me and this other girl are like, silent, silent, and so someone's singing over the top, and the senior pastor, female senior pastor of the church that we are at this Christmas party for, she's in the background going, shh, shh, every time we say silent, and we're just being silly with it and everything. And so as we're hushing back there, that's what I keep thinking of, is her, like, shh. I probably shouldn't have done that into the mic the first time, so I apologize. All right, so the last several times I spoke, we've been walking our way through Micah 6:8. Okay? I've told you, O man, what is good, right? But to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And so we've been making our way through this, right? As I said, it's this verse that has arrested me, and it was in different parts, and so we've been taking it one part at a time. So first we talked about doing justice and what that meant and what an active role you had to do. Like, justice doesn't just come. You don't just walk and it springs up like from your feet. You know what I mean? Like one of those cartoons where they walk and like the little daffodils and the daisies are like springing up behind them. It doesn't just come. It's something you actually have to work at, right? That do was really important. It wasn't a word just to skip over. It was something that actually let us know the active engagement and the active role that we had to play in rebuking the oppressor and relieving the oppressed. Okay? And then we talked about loving mercy or loving kindness, and about how loving is engaging in that thing that brings you pleasure and it gives you more pleasure, and that kindness and mercy is something that is supposed to delight our hearts. right? Like, extending it isn't something we do out of obligation. It is because we are delighted to extend mercy to other people. We are delighted to extend kindness to other people. And then that mercy and justice was really important because that mercy tempers justice, right? Without the aspect of mercy, it'd be very easy to go to a level of harshness in terms of justice. You know, once you start paying attention to the plight of the oppressed, and it turns your heart and you decide that you're going to do something about that, it is very easy to cross over a line and become harsh with that, right? You see someone doing something and you intervene in the situation, but you do it in a way that oversteps your godly boundaries, right? Like we talked about Moses, and he, you know, he realizes he's the deliverer of his people. He sees an Egyptian, you know, attacking or in some kind of altercation with an Israelite, and he jumps in the middle of it. But when he jumps in the middle of it, he kills the Egyptian. Right. And then the next week when he comes, not the next week, the next day when he comes back, I just jumped it a little bit bigger. The next day when he comes back, all the Israelites are like, oh, are you going to kill me too? Which lets you know that even in the bare bones of that sketch, that something really intense went down. You know, like, we don't know all the details, but you know it's intense because when he goes back into the situation, the other Israelites aren't celebrating his protection of them. You know, they're upset. You know, they're like, so what? You're gonna come in here and do this to us too? So, you know, even though we don't know all the details, you know he overstepped in some kind of way because of their response to them. You know, like when I'm disciplining my children. Like, that's one of the ways where you can always tell if you overstepped or something, is how do they respond back to you when it's over? If they're trembling in fear, you screwed something up, like, majorly. And you need to fix that immediately, you know? Like, my husband was a teacher for a long time, and, you know, sometimes things would get, you know, loud with students or intense with students, and sometimes he'd go, ooh, wait, okay, that, I really pressed them on that point. Did I go too far? And he would always know based on how they responded back to them. If they came back to him with love and everything was cool, he was like, okay, we're still good. But if for some reason they shirked away from him, then he knew he had stepped over the line. And that shouldn't be the only thing you use. Like, you don't want to just cross the line and figure out if people are upset afterwards. Like, don't use that as an excuse just to, like, well, I'm just going to keep going and then we'll just see how far I can take it. Like, no. Okay, have some restraint. But even if you don't think you crossed the line, but people are responding back to you poorly, you know something's gone wrong. So that mercy is supposed to temper that, right? Because I was just, all that was to say about how justice can easily go into a harsh place. But when you're looking at the person who is doing the oppression, right, the person who is laying the burden on people, and you look at them with the love that the Lord has for them, then you are not inclined to be harsh, even as you still deal with the problem, right? Because if you truly love that person, you don't want them to continue down a path that will lead to their destruction, right? So if I see someone grievously sinning, laying burdens on people, oppressing people, all things that I know that the Lord speaks about and says that, you know, he is not cool with, to put it mildly, then I want to pull that person out of the fire. I want to pull that person off the wrong path that they're on, right? So instead of rebuking the oppressor in a way that proves my superiority over them, right? That I'm like, I'm right, you're wrong, and let me tell you how right I am right now. Okay? I mean, I do that. I don't know if anyone else sometimes is inclined to just want people to know how right they are, you know? You are instead doing it out of a deep love for them, a desire to see them do right and be right. And that is super important. So those two things are like right there. We do justice, we love mercy. And I think it goes in that order because you have to have that determination of right from wrong before the mercy piece. Not really before, like hand in hand, but you don't want to just be like, oh, I'm just, kindness means that I just don't say anything to anybody, you know? But if you have that deep heart of justice first, then you realize that kindness is intervening in the situation. You know, you're not playing it nice so that you don't have to get your fingers messy, you know? You don't have to get into the middle of it. Does that make sense? So now we have this last piece, which is to walk humbly with your God. So all three of these pieces, I'm going to open up something so I can read it to you. All three of these pieces are in the context of God saying, what is good, right? And he, the good in that word is good no matter what, right? Like it's not good in contrast to this other thing. It's just good. Like the essence of what is good. He is saying, he has told you what is good. What is right. It's not the best of two choices. It's not, oh, well, if we do one of these things, this is better than that thing. No, it is just good, period. Okay? And that this is what he requires or demands of us. Okay? So I was reading this sermon by Charles Spurgeon about this topic. And he says, the worship of God is the subject of revelation, not of invention. True religion is not a new design displaying each man's taste, but a copy from a plan, framed and fixed by the Lord himself. We are to follow a path well-defined and not to map out a course for ourselves. We are not like children crying in the dark after an unknown father whom we seek by ways of our own, but we are as babes who follow where the warm hand of love gently draws them. To us, it is not night, for the true light has risen and is shining round about us. The Father has revealed himself, and we have an unction from the Holy One so that all things necessary for this life and godliness are lifted out of the region of the unknown and placed among the matters concerning which the prophet says, he has shown you, O man. The true worship of God is not left to be a matter of conjecture, to be worked out by a man's thoughts from within, but it is a matter of distinct revelation to be received by faith from above. I say that because, as I've said, when we start defining words and everything, I think it's important to do that because we are each a product of our culture. And so even as we desire to separate ourselves from it and to change our worldview into that which is the Lord's worldview, sometimes we don't realize how much we interpret things the way just that we've been brought up, like just how the word is, you know? I gave an example, I think the first time I talked this was that, okay, so I'm 35, and so I graduated high school 18 years ago. And so when I was in high school, you know, tolerance meant that when you disagreed with someone, that you just didn't shout them down and tell them they were stupid, right? Like you weren't rude to them. Tolerance was if you and someone else had a different opinion, then you were not rude, you did not insult, you did not shout them down, you kind of agreed to disagree. And now, you know, tolerance has this idea of enthusiastic agreement, that if I don't enthusiastically agree with your way of life, then I'm not being tolerant. If I don't support what you are doing with my words and with my actions, I am no longer being tolerant. I no longer have the option to just not say anything. You know? There's cases of, you know, managers or supervisors losing their jobs because something was said and they didn't treat one announcement the way they treated other ones. Like, they didn't disparage, they just maybe exercised their right to be silent, and that was no longer a right that they had for themselves. And, you know, it's in a bunch of different areas, you know, that concept of tolerance. And so for me, because of when I went to school, I used tolerance one way, and I understand the other ways. But when I have conversations with youth who are in school right now, they have a whole different shades of meaning to it. And so I can have a conversation with them, and it can hit a bunch of minefields just because we're not working from the same definitions. And these can be godly Christian kids, but they are not aware that there's a different meaning because this is the meaning that they have. This is the meaning that they're working with. So I think it's super important for us to always pay attention to that and come to that plumb line. And so when we start off this thing saying, he has shown you what is good, this is what is right, this is what he demands, this is what he requires, there's safety in that. Because we don't have to figure it out ourselves. Right? Like, I prefer to have clarity. You know, like, when I work a job, like, one of the worst things is I do a lot of administrative work. One of the worst things is for, like, my supervisor to come and dump a project in my lap, but not actually tell me what he wants. Right? Like, hey, Val, I want you to plan a retreat for our team and their spouses. You know, like 100 people. Sometime next spring. Right? It's like, okay. So maybe I plan a retreat like it's like a spiritual getaway. Like, we're all going to we're going to renew. We're going to reconnect with the vision of the ministry. We're going to connect with each other. And they actually meant a working retreat. You know what I mean? Like, maybe we're going to launch this whole new program in the summer. And this was our launch point, and it was supposed to be this massive thing. And so now I've planned something that may be awesome, but it did not do at all what he wanted to do, right? Because I left to figure it out myself. And so many of us, when we try to figure stuff out ourselves, we screw it up, right? I mean, you try to figure out what your spouse wants. You try to figure out what your parents want, what your boss wants, what your coworkers want. And you're going from your own grid and they're going from their own grid, and it's just a mess. But the Lord is a good leader and a good father, and he doesn't let us get into that kind of swamp. He goes, this is what it is. Because in the passage before that, if you remember, the Israelites are rolling through all this stuff. Like, do you want thousands of rams and lambs or rivers of oil? Or should we sacrifice our firstborn? And so some of the stuff that they're saying is really off track, right? Like the rams and the rivers of oil wouldn't have gotten them in God's good graces, but it wouldn't have screwed anything up either, right? But the sacrificing their firstborns, they would have been way worse off than they were, right? And that's what happens when we try to figure stuff out ourselves. And so the way God wants us to worship him and the way he wants us to live, he sets. Okay? We don't set. Okay? We don't decide what it looks like. Okay? He sets it. And there's safety and there's comfort in that, even though it can feel like a constraint. We don't have to go, but, what about, but. He's like, no, do justice, love mercy, walk humbly, right? And the expression of that looks a little bit different based on the culture, you know. The stranger in a foreign land looks different in America in the 21st century, right? Than it did in 1000 BC, okay? But it's still the same concept. You're still doing justice. Okay, All right, so I love this part. I want to say this because, as I've said multiple times, I'm a word person. And this one, I started doing the words, and it felt like I was just like, oh, this is so good. Oh, this is so good. This is so rich. I could just stand up here and read definitions. And it would just like, but I'm not going to do that to you guys. Because I understand that not everybody is a word person like me. So I'm not just going to read the dictionary to you and like wait for the Lord to pour out his anointing. Although that's what happened for me. I was like sitting there with my Strong's Concordance and the Webster's 1828. I keep saying the wrong one. I'm going to get it. I use the right one. I just say it wrong. And just felt it. Okay. So to walk humbly with your God. So the first thing that struck me was that it was a different pattern than the other ones. Like the first one is to do justice. It's like verb noun. To love mercy, verb noun. And then it's like to walk humbly with your God, verb. I won't go into all the grammatical stuff, but like verb and a lot of stuff that like talks about that verb, not just a noun. Like it's like, what do you do with justice? Do it. Mercy, love it. There's no noun there to pull out for this one where you can be like, walk it, right? So to walk, it's this Hebrew word yalak, okay, which means to walk, but it also means to live. Right? It's how you do everything. Okay? In the Webster's, it talks about to act on any occasion or to pursue a particular course of life. Okay? It's another one of those really active words. It's not something that you don't engage in. If you're walking, you're out there, right? You're extending yourself. Right? Like one of those fitness standards, you know, get your 10,000 steps a day. If you're walking, like you're doing something. It's an active thing. Okay. And then the word humbly is this Hebrew word tsana, to be humble, to be modest, to be lowly. So I stopped there first. Because, you know, humility, humbleness, we're all kind of like, okay, I think I get what that means. But then when they say to be lowly, like, I don't know about you, but I feel like when someone is lowly, that maybe they're lacking some self-esteem. Like, maybe they're pushing themselves down. And I'm like, that can't be what God means, right? Like, it can't be what he means to have no, like, self-esteem to, like, what? Like, so I looked it up, as I always do. And lowly means to be free from pride or meek. That word to be modest means restrained by a sense of propriety, not forward or bold, not presumptuous or arrogant, not boastful. So I'm like, okay, we're getting somewhere here, right? Okay, with your God. And in my newfound quest of leaving no stone unturned, I looked up what with meant. Means in connection to, as an appendage, right? With your God. And the Hebrew word for God there is Elohim, which is one of the most common names of God in the Bible. Elohim is the infinite, all-powerful God who shows by his works that he is the creator, sustainer, and supreme judge of the world. Okay. So we have God. Using the name that is most common for him to be called by. So he is not displaying himself as someone new here. He's saying, Elohim. This is who you know, right? He's not doing a new name. So he is the one that they know as the creator, the one who made heaven and earth, who made everything that dwells in it. He is the sustainer, the one who keeps the earth spinning, the one who puts breath in our lungs, the one who pours out rain on both the just and the unjust. Right? The stars are there because he put them there and he keeps them there. Right? He is the sustainer. And he is the supreme judge of the world. He is the one who sees to the heart, who knows your motives, who knows your thoughts, and who will hold you to account for them. The creator, the sustainer, the judge. So, Elohim, he is here, right? Like way higher than I can reach. Elohim. And we are to walk with him. And we are to walk humbly with him. And so humility in this context is a right understanding of his position and our position. Right? Like when we talked about mercy and kindness a couple weeks ago, I said, if you know what you receive from the Lord, it's so much easier to then extend that to other people, right? Because I know who I am and who I was and the things I struggled with and what God delivered me from. And so when I remember that, I am not harsh with others because I was there once too, you know? Even if their specific expression of sin is not what I did, we were all sinners. And when you break it down to like the component, like the heart attitude that leads to whatever sin they're doing, I had that heart attitude too. Mine just cracked on a different fault line, right? And so I'm able to extend mercy because I know who I was and where God got me from. And so humility is that something similar. I know who God is, and I know who I am in relation to that. And so, if God is the one who sustains, who puts breath in my lungs, then what can I say I do on my own? Right? Like, if I, like, we sat in worship, we sung, but God gave us the breath to sing, so even my worship didn't come on my own. Like, he loves it, and it's a sacrifice of praise to him, but he gave me the breath to sing that. I am not bringing to him anything that wasn't his to start with. You know, like we do tithes, we do offerings, right? It was his money. You know what I mean? Like, it's his, right? Like, I walk and I have strength because he gave it to me. So whatever I do with that strength was his. Like, it's only right to give it to him. You know, I use the analogy sometimes, like, we're coming up on Christmas. My kids are going to buy us Christmas presents. You know, Ron and I just each had a birthday. They got us birthday presents. Whose money did they use to get those birthday presents? Right? Right? They bought me something for my birthday with my money. And I loved it. But they gave me from what was mine. And so it's when you disconnect from that and you think that you actually have something on your own to give to God, that's when pride starts to creep in. Okay? There, I was reading this thing and it was talking about root sins, like the root attitudes that express themselves in any number of ways in our lives, and talking about how people struggle with certain things. You know what I mean? Like, we struggle with everything, but there's certain things that have more of a hold in general. And it was asking, you know, it was like going through this whole thing so you could figure out what yours was. Like, it was like, what three did they use? The eyes, like vanity, like wanting what other people have, pride, thinking better about yourself, or sensuousness, like how you feel ruling what you do. Like either what you see ruling what you do, what you feel ruling how you do, or how you think about yourself. And it made this point, and you can make a case for other things, but it was like, the point was, is that it said this verse, this sentence where it said, if you don't see yourself struggling with one of these, your issue is pride. And I just love that. Like, it was going through this whole thing, like, how to figure it out. And then it was just like, if you don't see yourself struggling with one of these, your issue is pride. And so, when you are disconnected from the truth of who God is, when you are disconnected from the truth of who you are in relation to God, that's pride. Right? That's pride. Humility is understanding who you are in relation to the Lord. It's not this abasement of like, I'm nothing. You know, like, it's, you might say that before the Lord because you just have a right understanding, but it's not this false shoving yourself down either. Like, the Lord loves you. He extended an offer to you to be with him forever. Like, it says he loves you with the same love that he loves Jesus, right? Like, there's no reason to, like, think that you're like some worm underneath his foot or whatever, but you are not self-sufficient. You are not independent. You have nothing outside of the Lord. Nothing. You know, a lot of times we say that and we're like, yeah, I have nothing. If it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be here. But it's like, no, really, if it wasn't for God, you wouldn't be here. Like, on a whole bunch of stuff. Like, you're talking about the fact that he, like, saved you from this thing. And that's awesome. But, like, without God, you really wouldn't be here. Like, there'd be no gravity to hold you to the face of the earth. There would be no air to breathe. Like, you would not be here at all. Like, you know, your component atoms wouldn't hold themselves together. Like, you wouldn't be here. And so, this is important because all these things are paired together, right? Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. And so we saw that we needed mercy to temper the justice. And we need humility above all of those things. Because it is very easy, you start discussing right from wrong. You're like, you're cleaving the things. You're doing the two-edged sword thing. You're like, this is right. This is wrong. You're rebuking the oppressor. You're relieving the oppressed. But yet you're also so tender-hearted that you're like extending the hand of comfort to the oppressor, right? And you're like, let me lift you, let me show you the way. I know myself. And if I thought I was doing that in my own strength, like, I would want to walk around with like a Superman shirt on. Like, check me out. Like, I know right from wrong and truth from lie in every circumstance, but I still love the liar and the wrong one. I bring them back to the path of righteousness. Yeah, that's me. Right? You know, like, just so full of myself. Like, I know myself. No one else has to agree with me because I know me. And I would think I was all that and a bag of chips. Like, no one would be able to tell me anything. My head would be so puffed up, right? But justice comes from the Lord. I only know truth because God is truth. I only know what is right because he is the one who has given the standard. I know what holiness is because it's him, right? Like, I'm not the one making truth, right? It's God's truth. God is truth. He's not just setting it out. He is it, right? I can extend love because God is love, right? It's not something I worked up on my own. It's not something I figured out, right? Because left to my own devices, love would look very different. I mean, let's just tell the truth, right? If I'm the one deciding what is truth, if I'm the one deciding what is beauty, if I'm the one deciding what is right, what is love, it would look a whole lot different, and it would probably change like every 3 days. You know? But because it's God, it is unchanging, it is perfect, and I am merely reflecting that standard. Right? I'm able to love because God is love and because he loves me. Right? That's the only reason why I know what love is. You know, because God loved me first. I only know what truth is because he is there. Okay? So that humility is this aspect. I started off with that whole kind of like hypothetical, like, what if I had justice and what if I had mercy, but I had no humility? But the truth really is that you can't have justice and you can't have mercy without that humility. Because unless you really know who God is, you can't know what justice is, right? Unless you know God as love and you know where you came from, like the very real fact that you ran after him because he pulled you first, right? Draw me and I will run after you, right? He drew you, or we love God because he first loved us. We only have that because he was the one who extended it to us. So you can't have justice and you can't have mercy unless you have that humility. If you don't know who God is, I guarantee you, you are doing justice wrong. And we see that in our world today. We see a lot of false justice. You know, there's a social justice movement that is stirring up all over the earth that catches in some good stuff, but then catches in a whole lot of bad stuff too. You know, like, I went to an arts high school, so I have a lot of very, 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 very liberal acquaintances from high school. Like, all the way out there, liberal. Like, all the way out there, right? And they know me, and they know the kind of stuff I champion. And so sometimes they're like, hey, you should get involved in this other cause. I'm like, not so much. And they're like, but you're into this? And you're into this, and you're into this. I mean, the next logical step is, no, it's actually not. You know, I understand why you would think that, but no, it's not. And we're on two completely different worldviews. Two completely different worldviews. And they really, really, truly do not understand why I can agree with them about the inherent humanity of each person and inherent dignity and what that means about how people should be treated and what kind of things that they're entitled to in terms of safe housing and in terms of food and in terms of water and shelter and the ability to work, and not also think that other certain rights should be bundled up in that. Like, it's a complete and total disconnect. Because they're like, well, you believe that they're people? I'm like, yes. And you believe that people should be treated this way? I'm like, yes. With you. And you believe that this? And you believe that people have choices? And you believe that this? I'm like, yes. 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 Oops. I was pounding and I jumped free. And they're like, well, then you should also believe. And I'm like, you don't get to tell me what I should also believe, because I don't. Right? And so it's this complete and utter just disconnect, you know? And it's because I know who God is, and I know what truth is, and I use that to extend, right? But they're going with whatever popular social opinion is there, you know? And so we have these, you know, we have these major disconnects. And interestingly enough, I don't lose them as acquaintances or as friends. You know, we don't lose the relationship because they question me and they press me hard. And even when I can't answer questions, I go, well, if God is who I say he is, and he is, then he's not threatened by your questions. And so I'm not threatened either. Just because I can't answer you does not mean there is no answer. I'm just not that smart. Right? And so because I can say that, we don't lose the relationship, which means they keep coming back around, you know, which is great, you know. I thought I was going to sneeze. Okay, so humility. Lowly, modest, meek, submissive. Opposed to proud, haughty, arrogant, or assuming. So it's one of those words that is defined positively, like the things that it is, and negatively, the things that it is not. And I like that. Opposed to being proud, haughty, arrogant, or assuming. In an evangelical sense, thank you. In the evangelical sense, it's having a low opinion of oneself, a deep sense of unworthiness in the sight of God. We talked about lowly, we talked about modest, meek, not easily provoked or irritated. Okay, so that hits me where I live a lot of times. Not easily provoked or irritated. We'll just let that sit. Yielding. Given to forbearance under injuries. So forbearance is like exercising patience when someone hurts you. Submissive to the divine will. Not proud. It strikes me how many of these words include not proud, opposed to being proud, not proud. Has no pride, lacks pride, right? Like every definition has a little bit of that in there. Maybe it's something we should pay attention to. Not proud, self-sufficient, or refractory, not peevish. I looked up what refractory meant because I wasn't sure. And it means being unmanageable, not compliant. There's a word when it's used with metals, but I really like it, where it says not easily yielding to the force of heat. Yeah. And so, which makes me think of when you think about gold and you heat it up and then the yucky stuff comes up to the top, so you skim it off, right? I have never actually done that, but YouTube is an amazing thing. So you heat it up and then you skim off the impurities off the top, right? Okay. And so the Lord does the same things to our hearts. He heats us up and then he skims the yucky stuff off the top. Right? So if we are refractory and we are not easily yielding to the force of heat, it means that we don't change even when God puts pressure on us, which is not a place I want to be. Right? Like if the Lord, like my heart's desire, and I don't always do this well, but it is still my heart's desire, is that the first time the Lord tells me something needs to change in my life, and he like does the thing that makes it clear that it needs to change, right? Like, have you ever been in a situation like God's been talking to you about something like, hey, you need to stop, right? Like I'll do like rolling your eyes or something. Like you need to stop with that kind of like when your mom talks to you and you roll your eyes back and the disrespect that needs to stop, right? And then something happens and then like it becomes real clear that that was God telling you to do that and maybe you should have gotten it in check before this moment and now things are much more embarrassing and there's much more consequences because you didn't deal with it the first time, right? I don't ever want it to go past that point in my life. Like God said it and I knew it was the Lord. I don't want to get to the point where he's like, let me turn that up a little bit more to make it real clear that you shouldn't be doing that anymore. Let me turn it up a little bit more so that you know you're not supposed to be doing that. Right? Like, let me turn that up some more. You know what I mean? Like, and now all of a sudden you're caught in some crazy lie that you said and you knew you should have told the truth like 6 months before that. But now you're just caught in this huge mess and you're like, oh, if I had just done what the Lord said, right? I never want to be a person where heat from God does not make me yield. You know, there's this scary verse in Romans that talks about the Lord just delivering people over to their reprobate mind. Like, that terrifies me. That I could just be so obstinate before the Lord, so unmanageable and so unyielding, that finally he's just like, oh, you want that? Well, why don't you go ahead? Like, that idea of grieving the Holy Spirit to the point where he stops talking to me, where I now, my conscience is seared, right? Like, that's scary stuff. So that idea of being refractory, that's not something I want, right? So under Micah was not peevish and apt to complain of divine dispensation. So you don't complain about divine dispensation. So dispensation is what the Lord gives, right? Divine dispensation, it's what he gives. And so it's like, okay, so the Lord caused me to be born in the United States of America in 1982, right? Caused me to be born female, caused me to be born with brown skin, caused me to have the parents that I have, right? That is what he gave me. That is what I have. It is, none of those things are the result of someone sinning against me, or someone pushing me down in any kind of way. Like, there's other things in your life that you can go, well, I have that, but it's because someone either did something wrong or did something right for me. Like, no, that's just what the Lord gave me. And so I could complain about those things. Like, okay, so maybe she's, one of my kids has a favorite artist. I'm going to leave it all nice and generic because they're in here, even though it's not a bad thing. One of my kids has a favorite artist, and one of the songs is always talking about, like, I wish I was born in this year, I wish I was born in that year, I wish I was born. And the song irritates me so much. Like, I always want to skip it when it comes on because I'm so upset with the song. And it's this lighthearted, like, it's super cute. But I'm just like, no, no. You're where you are for a reason. You're in the time that you were for a reason. In Acts, it says that the God puts boundaries and times and place around nations and peoples so that they can know him and grope for him. And in groping for him, they may find him. Right? So if that's about a nation, like God goes, okay, the United States of America has these boundaries and will exist from this time to that time. Right? Then how much more true is it for the individual? Like, God created this spirit, right? This person that is Valerie, the essence of me, and said, the best time for her to be born is here. The best place for her to be born is here, in this country. And in doing this, she will have the opportunity to come to know me. I don't have any right to complain about that, right? I don't have any reason to complain about that. And so the other word, the not pride word, was there a lot. But the other word that I saw a lot was submissive, which means yielding to the will of the power of another or obedient. Actually, at the Christmas gathering, submission came up at one point, and Casey made this point. She goes, well, submission is a choice. Like, the person chooses to submit, because if it's forced on them, it's oppression. Right? And that's not God. So submission is your choice. You yield to the will of God. So in all of this, humility isn't something he pushes on us, right? God is God. He has no reason to, like, slam it on us, right? He is who he is. An older woman that I know says, God is a gentleman. He does not force himself. Right? He has no need to. Okay? So God is the creator, the sustainer, the judge. And humility is what we do in response to that. we have the choice to either like kind of turn around and be like, I don't believe that, or I doubt that, or I don't see that, or I see that, but, you know, a friend of mine says that anything that you say after the but invalidates everything that came before it. Like, as soon as you say but, you might as well have just X'd out the entire rest, the entire first part of the sentence, because what you really meant was what came after it, right? So if you're like, oh God, I see who you are, but I can do what I want, then you don't really see who God is, right? And that I can do what I want doesn't always have to come out verbally. It just comes out in the very real fact that you don't obey, that you don't yield, that you choose to go your own way, that you choose to ignore that even the very fact that you have a choice is because God gave you one. Right? And so, where we're ending this is to walk humbly with your God. Every single one of those things is important. To walk. Humility isn't something that just comes in your prayer closet, right? Like you sit in your devotions and you're like, oh God, you're so big. And you're weeping before the majesty of him. And then you walk out the door and you don't carry that with you, right? Humbly. So you carry yourself in every act that you do in a way that acknowledges who God is and who you are in relation to him. And that only comes because you're doing it with, in connection to, right, your God. And the your part is important there too. Because even the demons know the Lord and tremble. Right? That's not humility. That's just, they just scared. They're pumped. Right? It's just knowledge. Right? If Elohim, the creator, the sustainer, the supreme judge of the universe, is not your God, then you will have no way to be connected with him. You will have no way to walk with him. And there will be no true humility in your life. God requires this of us. It's not something that's optional. It's not something to play around with or to think that, oh, I can get this another time. He requires us to do justly. He requires us to love mercy. He requires us to walk in humility. In the New Testament, Jesus says that the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And it's the exact same thing with different words. Because if you do that, you will do this. If you do this, you'll do that. You can't walk in humility without giving everything that you are to the Lord. You can't do justice or love mercy unless you're loving your neighbor, right? They're the exact same thing. The exact same thing. So I'm just going to close in prayer. Father, I thank you for the truth of your word. I thank you that you do not leave us to flounder, to not know what you desire, to not know how we can please you. You put it out clearly, and you make sure that we have everything that is necessary to attain it. And the thing that you ask of us is to do justice, to love mercy and kindness, and to walk humbly before you. And so, Father, I ask that you would open our eyes to see your truth, to see your beauty, that we would know you, Elohim, as you truly are, as the infinite, all-powerful God who shows by your works that you are the creator, the sustainer, and the supreme judge of the world. You show us who you are, God. Open our eyes so that we can see it. Open our minds so that we would know what true justice is. Open our minds that we would know what true mercy is, God. And Father, I pray that you would free us from pride. Pray that you would free us from pride, God. That we would be ones who yield before you, who are submissive to the truth of who you are, who are obedient to your will, God. I thank you that you don't just say us to walk humbly, but you say that we do it in partnership with you, God. I thank you, Lord, for the truth of your word. In Jesus' name, amen.